Hello, and welcome to Conversations Towards Reconciliation with Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson. I'm your host, Robert Washburn. This program is coming to you from the Williams Treaty Territory and Northumberland 89.7 FM. For the next 30 minutes, we will bring you important stories and issues facing Indigenous and non-Indigenous people living here in Northumberland County and across the country. It is your chance to become better informed, more engaged, and empowered as we all move together on the path to reconciliation. So join us for the next step on this journey. I'm so pleased to welcome back Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson. Good to see you again, Chief Simpson.
Good to see you too, Robert.
Let's begin with what happened. Can you describe what took place at a recent excavation? I'll start again. Let's begin with what happened. Can you describe what took place recently at the excavation of a proposed parking lot next to the new Ontario Power Generation, or OPG, headquarters building?
Well, a very unfortunate incident occurred at the new OPG headquarters in Oshawa. It appears that expansive parking lots were excavated without doing any formal archaeology. And during the excavation process, we know that burial grounds were disturbed because we have been on site for a couple of days screening the materials after the fact. So after the site was destroyed, we came in and discovered the burial.
What would be any sort of indication that this might even potentially have archaeological material?
Well, first of all, it's in a very sacred location to Anishinaabe, particularly the Mississauga Nations. It's in a place called Scugog Caring Place, which was a meeting of our nations. It was a place where you would meet in the summer and conduct trade, conduct ceremony. And it was a place that we knew that there was burial grounds. There was no burial grounds in the area. So to not think that you needed to do any archaeology before you were excavating parking lots is, we just don't understand how that happened.
Well, how well known is Scugog Carrying Place? I mean, you would know what it is, but I mean, for the rest of the community, how would they know that that was even significant?
I think anyone that's studied Indigenous history, or some people who just take walks along the lake shore in that area, there's plaques all around. I know that there's some interpretive centers. I was helping to update the language last year on Scugog Caring Place plaques. So I think it's something that if you live in the area and you love nature, you're biking or you're walking, you're going to come across Scugog Caring Place and read those plaques and understand the history.
I also understand that there's been a book dedicated to the Scugog Carrying in Place, and that there's been numerous articles as well, both within the community and within the academic community, about this this carrying place. Is that correct?
Yes, there has. I know there's been lots of research, writings, reports. It's something that the local community there is very proud of. But then I guess the larger community outside of that area in Oshawa might not know as much, just because there is so much vibrant history all over. But this is one gem that as Mississauga Nations, we know about. But I think now more people are going to learn about it beyond First Nations.
How did you find out, first of all, what had taken place?
Well, it's almost an ironic coincidence. We were in April at a meeting at OPG headquarters, where we're meeting with the new CEO, and we're having a discussion about the relationship, about duty to consult, about the need for archaeology. And the meeting went very well. It seemed like we made good progress on our relationship. And then as we were exiting the building, we looked around and we saw parking lots being excavated, big earth movers and piles of dirt. And I looked at my consultation manager and we're like, did we see the archaeology on this? And Julie's like, I haven't. So then we started asking some questions about how they knew that they could dig there without us knowing, being contacted and doing archaeology in such a sensitive location. And then we were informed that OPG was told that they didn't need to do an archaeological assessment. The city of Oshawa told them that it was already disturbed and excavated area, so that it didn't need archaeology. But we know that it wasn't. It was pristine land that hadn't been excavated in the past. So there was obviously a misunderstanding there. But even so, OPG should have followed their own guidelines, their own practices, knowing their relationship with us. They should have undertaken that archaeology anyway, even though they were told not to, because it clearly wasn't earlier excavated territory.
Do you remember the date of that meeting?
Would have been in early April, I'm going to say. So the first half of April, 2025.
So when you're standing there and all this is unfolding and you're seeing what's happening, what was your reaction in that moment?
It was one of concern, thinking what just happened here is we know that there's burial grounds. There's an old burial ground 500 meters away from this site. So I was very concerned. That's why we got on the phone with OPG. They seemed to not think that it was a big deal. They were given assurances by the city of Oshawa that they could proceed. And then we said that that's not necessarily true. But by this time, the parking lots had already been excavated. There was mounds of dirt. It looks like there's probably mounds of dirt that have been carried off site, which we'll need to track down and screen. But at that point, when we said, you know, we can't allow this, they did stop excavation. But unfortunately, the sites had already been completely excavated. The soil piles were about to be removed out, and we said, keep those soil piles there. So then we entered negotiations in how we were going to proceed archaeologically. We agreed on an archaeological firm to undertake it. It had been determined that it would be about a 40-day process to screen all the materials with the biggest screening kit out there. And then within a day and a half, we came across skull fragments of ancestors. And this is what we were expecting. Obviously, it was the worst feeling you could have. If there had been remains, our common knowledge would have said that it would have been near the end, in the middle, at the bottom of those piles. But so the fact that we hit remains on the very edge of these piles means that there's potential for quite a significant burial site to have been destroyed.
In a joint media release from Alderville, Curve Lake, and Hiawatha First Nations, it says the site is historic. Can you take us back? We talked about this briefly when you were describing the carrying place, but can you describe in more detail, the significance of this site?
Well, we know that we've occupied this site for at least the last 8,000 years, 10,000 years, and probably before. But once you get into the Ice Age, a lot of those the archaeology would have been destroyed by the retreating glaciers. And advancing glaciers. So we know that pretty much since the end of the last ice age, we've been in that spot continuously. The Mississauga nations are the only people that have continuously occupied southern Ontario for the past 10,000 years. And we know that this was a very significant meeting place for our people. Where the lake rivers meet at the north shore of Lake Ontario was a lot of our sacred areas, and this is one of them. A lot of them have been destroyed since, so this was sort of like a jewel that had been preserved, and we were happy to have it. And of all the remains that have been destroyed in the past like 300 years from settlement, we were hoping to just to preserve everything that's left, and unfortunately we lost one this year.
I also understand there's a significance to the term carrying place. It was actually like a highway or a trail that you would use year round to move up and down. Can you just talk a bit about that and how that's significant?
Yeah. So if you think of rivers and lakes as our highways, for lack of a better word, this is where from Lake Ontario you would meet before transporting any goods, trade goods, people, food, furs through the river systems further north into southern Ontario interior. So this was a major hub, if you will, to transport these items from all over. So we had trade networks probably throughout the whole Great Lakes system, and this would have been one of the major ports, if you will, to distribute those goods.
Now, I mentioned that Elderville, Curve Lake, and Hiawatha First Nations are involved. For those who may not understand, why are all three involved and not just one?
Well, there's actually four, because there's also the Mississauga of Skookog Island First Nation, and they are actually the closest First Nation to the site. So us four are the four Mississauga Nations of the Williams Treaty First Nations. We are reaching out as well to the three Chippewa Nations of the Williams Treaty First Nations, but this is in our treaty territory. This is in our historic territory. This is areas that we, our four First Nations, have occupied for thousands of years. So this, we haven't identified who those bones belong to, whose ancestors they are, but you can pretty much be assured that they're our ancestors.
What sort of a process is used to determine that kind of relationship?
Well, the first thing to do is find out if they were recent remains or historic remains. So that's the very first step that happened, because it could have been some type of nefarious recent activity that these bones ended up there. So the very first thing you want to do is determine that it's not a recent event. Otherwise, the police come in and they shut it down as a crime scene. But once it was determined that they were indeed historic, then you move into the archaeology phase. And normally in a site like this, you would not have it destroyed, and you would be able to determine through context of the artifacts, which cultures they belong to and at which time periods they belong to. So we will be going through all of that material, and hopefully enough preserved artifacts that we can piece together will come out that we will be able to identify it. We will also be looking past the excavated area to see if maybe the burial site continues through and hasn't been disturbed. And from there, we should get a better picture as well too. We're fairly confident that they are Mississauga ancestors.
Have you found any sacred objects, even in the short amount of time that you've been working there?
No, we haven't. So it was actually our field liaison, our archaeological field liaison, that informed us shortly after the ancestors were discovered. So from there, I think we knew even before anybody else, because we had those eyes on sites, which we do for sites across our territory. We put archaeological liaisons on the sites to keep us posted on things like this that might happen. So we were obviously quite shocked that it happened, but that was the first find. And then after that was discovered, the whole thing was shut down. The archaeology ceases, because we are now moving into a full burial site investigation, which requires different steps.
Could you explain the burial practices of your people?
Yes. So it depends on the situation, but and the time period as well. But we would often bury individuals or families in sacred areas, usually along the shore if possible. So an area like the Caring Place that overlooks Lake Ontario would be a prime location to do this. So you want something on the high ground so it won't be flooded. You want something high because that's the spirits are closer to the sky. And you generally want something that's naturally preserved and just a nice location. So if it's pleasing to the eyes, then that's where you want to rest your ancestors for eternity, hopefully.
Would there be anything that would identify the burial site prior to digging?
There's things you can look for. Elevated areas, plateaus would give you a good idea. And closer to the water, the more likely you are to hit a burial site, as well as, just recent archaeological history, because for years now, unfortunately, bones have been washing up on the shore around that area. So we knew that there was historic burial sites around that were being disturbed, maybe being washed away, or excavated material that had been pushed close to the water or into the water that these fragments were washing up. So anyone who knows anything about archaeology and First Nations burial practices wouldn't have known that this is a very high likelihood of a burial site being anywhere in that area.
Of course, we in modern times know the kinds of ceremonies and the kinds of rituals that we have when we lose a loved one. Can you describe historically how people would, in your culture, what would be the process by which they would be buried?
There were differing practices, but generally you would start with a cedar bath after the loved one, the ancestor, has passed. So you give them a cedar bath, you do the ceremony, everyone says their what they want to say, and then you have the medicines, you have your smudging, and then you would proceed to lay that person into the ground, and everyone would proceed to help bury them in. Now, we don't know exactly how it went historically further back, but we can surmise by the placement of the remains and the mounds. So we know our people about 1,000 years ago or so built burial mounds where we are in Alderville. We are just right across the lake from the Serpent Mounds, where there's hundreds of remains buried. So we know that you can identify it because of the mound structures. So those were identified really early on once, you know, we moved back into this area as being our ancestors there. So when archaeology did happen in the 50s, they were found right away. They've been protected, protected and preserved. So it's now like a park-like structure, and it's a place of reverence. So ideally, we would have these remains, this burial site, if there's any left, it would be designated as a cemetery under the Burials Act, and then it would never be able to be disturbed again.
Is there any way that individuals would know that their particular ancestor was buried in a particular place?
Well, there would have been, except for the break with colonialism and the residential schools, where they specifically went to take out our traditional knowledge, our historical knowledge of ourselves. So we would have been passing down this information through our oral histories for thousands of years. So we probably knew where everything was. But sadly, with 100 years of residential schools, assimilationist policies, Indian Act policies, that was all lost. So now we can only take our best guesses. There has been recent burials. So like we know that where we, in the last 200 years, Alderville knows where we have buried our ancestors and our relatives. So now that's starting up again, but there was a break with that knowledge.
One issue that was raised in a press release was the lack of documentation available that was supposed to be on the public record. Could you explain what allegedly took place?
Yes. So once we found out that the parking lot had been excavated, we asked certain questions that they're supposed to be given answers to. We wanted to know about the processes, what applications they put into the regulatory bodies that allowed them to proceed in this way. So this is a normal thing that proponents will do. They'll file the paperwork, and then we can follow it back and say, yes, we can see that document, that paper trail of how they arrived at the conclusion to do this. So we asked for that documentation, the paperwork that showed the approvals to get to the point where they were able to excavate this without archaeology. And I'm not saying that it doesn't exist, but as of now, it hasn't been disseminated to us.
What is the reaction of the members of Alderville?
Unfortunately, Alderville has seen a lot of this recently. A number of burial sites have been disturbed. Now, I'm not sure if Alderville or anybody's really prepared for how large this could be. This would be one of the largest desecrations of a site that we know of. We know in the past that it probably happened a lot, but in recent memory, we haven't seen a significant destruction of a burial site at the potential that this one is. Our best hope is that, you know, they just nicked the corner of the burial site and that just happened to be the only one found with the last scoop. I mean, that's what we hope, that's what we're praying for. You know, that's probably unlikely. So I think until we know the extent of the damage, we're sort of holding our breaths. We're very sad. We're grieving. We're disappointed. But we don't know how disappointed we should be, because we don't know the scope of it yet, but we just know it could be bad. But we have put our support staff on alert for members that might be experiencing increased emotional distress over this discovery. So we know that recently in Red Rock, First Nation, just north of Thunder Bay, They went through a similar incident where Parks Canada had built a parking lot over burial grounds. And so by knowing how those citizens of Red Rock responded, we are able to extrapolate how our members, our citizens, will feel. So we just want to make sure we've got all the supports in place for our members if and when they need it.
You mentioned in your answer that this has happened multiple times. Do you have a number that you could give us?
Just since I've been chief, I've seen it probably 6 or 7 times. And probably has happened a lot more that just hasn't been reported. And then I don't want people that do accidentally desecrate a burial mound, a burial site, they need to come forward. And it really is in their best interest. It's in our best interest. It's in everybody's best interest to come forth and do the right thing. We don't want people to just rebury it or forget about it. This imagine if it was your grandmother or your grandfather and that happened. You'd want to make sure you're doing the right thing.
Has the band council met at all to talk about this?
We discussed it first thing on our most recent council meeting on Monday, which was just a couple days after the discovery. So we were still looking for answers at that time. We're still looking for answers now. So we were going to let the facts really decide our way forward. I set up a meeting with the Anishinaabeg Nation and their team, burials team. I met with the burials registrar. So we've been gathering information, and we are, as a council, we're determined to make sure we do it the best way possible, make sure that we get those answers and we act accordingly. Right now, not knowing everything, like we just know a burial site has been desecrated, but we don't know the extent. We know how bad it is. We just don't know how really bad it is. But we are taking the right steps to make sure that everything's in place for the worst possible scenario. In our minds, for First Nations people, this is pretty much the worst thing that can happen. There lots of things happen, but this to us, this is like the worst thing that can happen.
How are you keeping the community informed?
Well, we put out a statement to the community. So our council decided that absolutely our people need to know. We can't, this is going to get out. We didn't want people finding out in the news. So we said we are going to have to inform our members. But that's when I reached out to Scugog First Nation, to Hiawatha, to Curve Lake. I was like, we need to say something to the members, and we want to let you know that we're planning on doing it so that you can put a message together. So that's when we decided we would put out a joint statement to put out to our members to inform them. So this wasn't really an open letter to the world. This was more a letter to inform our citizens that this had happened and to prepare themselves for it. But then from there, it got out, and the newspapers and media was picked up on it right away.
How will you keep the community informed going forward?
Well, any new developments, any new information coming from the investigation will be shared with the community on our social media. And right now, like, there is a pause because all archaeology has stopped. We have to bring in new screens, finer screens. We need to, on Friday, which is tomorrow, there needs to be a plan from OPG on which archaeological route they're going to go, ideally which company they're going to use to do it. And from there, the burial site investigation will go full steam. So nothing's happening for a few days, for a while. So it's going to be a while before we learn more. But we need to track down any missing soils that were excavated from the area, and wherever they are, we need to go, and we need to do the archaeology on those as well. Because if you look at a map, even a Google map of the area, you can see that the north and the western parking lots have just recently been excavated without that archaeology done. So, but the soil that's on site there is not sufficient to equate to all the soil that would have been removed from all this parking lot that's been done. So we need to track down where those soil piles are, and we need to screen them as well too.
Now, I understand the Chief Coroner of Ontario has been involved in this. You've mentioned several times archaeologists are involved, but I also understand that there's a role for elders and community members. What do they bring to the table in this situation?
Well, the very first thing we want to do as First Nations was to do ceremony there, because the ancestors would be disturbed. They would be very upset. An elder from Curve Lake went down to perform ceremony. And we expect there to be more ceremonies coming. We don't know what's going to happen. If it's a very serious desecration, then people might want to be there. People might want to be there 24 hours a day just to keep an eye on everything, to ensure that everything's going smoothly, just to be there to keep the spirits at peace. So we don't know how this is going to go. We just don't have those answers to know what the future holds for this. But we are holding our breath. We're hoping for the best, but we really are expecting the worst in this situation.
Has there been any formal reaction from Ontario Power Generation?
You know, I would assume that the CEO, president, would have reached out. Even a simple apology would have gone a long way. I did speak with their vice president of Indigenous Relations, and that was within hours of the discovery. We both didn't really know quite what to say because of it. But I got her assurance, you know, that they are committed to doing the right thing. But at the same time, I haven't heard from the CEO, which we were expecting to hear from. We certainly would be expecting an apology. They can't pretend that, you know, this wasn't their fault. It's their fault. And the burial ground was desecrated because of it. So to me, I feel like the response from OPG is insufficient.
Does Durham Region or the City of Oshawa have any role in this?
Well, I certainly would like to talk to the City of Oshawa as to why they would say archaeology was not required on that site, especially when they knew that a burial site was 500 meters away. In fact, there had been two relatively recent discoveries of remains, ancestors in this area, and they did not inform the First Nations about it. These remains were sitting with the coroner for years, one discovered last year that we just found out about. So had we known this, we would have been more alert to what was going on, and perhaps we would have stopped this from happening, done that proper archaeology. So in a lot of ways, Oshawa does bear a lot of responsibility for what happened.
Are there any plans for legal action?
I think it's too early for that discussion. We really want OPG to do the right thing. We want those commitments. The last thing we want is a protracted legal battle. This is why, you know, consultation, engagement, negotiations are more important now than ever. It's not time to close the door and, you know, lawyer up. We really feel like that we need more open dialogue now more than ever. So that's what I'm hoping for.
What about the costs? Who covers the costs for all of these things that you've done so far and going forward?
Generally, archaeology is a cost of the proponent. In this case, it would be OPG. They would be paying for that burial site investigation that's happening. They would have, you know, been, had they done a phase one and phase two, that cost would have been theirs. When we send archaeological liaisons to these sites, their salary is actually paid by that proponent. So generally, the proponent who wants to do the project, whatever it be, is the one that has to incur the cost of the archaeology.
At the heart of all of this is an issue that you and I have talked about quite a bit over the last 2 years, and that is this concept of duty to consult. How does this particular incident amplify the importance of duty to consult?
Well, to me, this is even something I brought to the CEO of OPG in that April meeting. I said that duty to consult is law in Canada. It's not optional when you are going to start a project. You don't wonder if archaeology needs to be done. It has to be done. This is the law. This is the way it goes. And, you know, if a phase one or phase two doesn't turn up anything, that means you're good to go. It doesn't take long. That's not expensive to do phase one and phase two. It's a very simplified process. And usually nothing goes past the phase two unless you find artifacts. If you find remains, then it goes right to a burial site investigation. But, you know, this is something that we need the proponents to be doing. I look around the towns around here, I see developments happening that I know we weren't consulted on. The new like housing developments going in, I was like, we were never consulted on that. So it's happening where proponents, well, just going ahead and doing it anyway. They're potentially destroying burial sites. You know, in OPG's defense, they've been generally open about this. But that archaeology should have been done. There should, even being told by Oshawa that they didn't need to do it, they should have still done it. So it's duty to consult has always been important, but this is an example of what happens when you don't do proper consultation.
You and I have talked about Bill 5 by the Ontario government. You and I have also talked a bit about Bill C-5 with the federal government. And it often seems, especially with business and institutions and government, that things happen and then Indigenous consultation seems to slide in afterwards. How do we change that so that things like this don't happen in the future?
Well, I guess I'll use the OPG example again, since that's the topic of the day. But when I met with them in April, I told the CEO that these things had to be done. And then she said that she was responsible to her board of directors and that the board of directors decides the direction. And I responded that OPG needs to see the Williams Treaty First Nations as a board of directors at that same level. You need to run these things through us as well. I hopefully that stuck with her. The damage at that point was already done for this parking lot, but you know, that's really how you need to be seeing these things. We are one of the top authorities when it comes to development on our territory. We're the rights holders. We didn't surrender our lands in these treaties. The treaties were more of a rental agreement for the newcomers to live on the territory. So we never gave up our lands. And as such, we still are those rights holders that have to be the ones to determine what happens on those territories. So this is the gist of what duty to consult is. It wasn't just something that some government pulled out of the air sometime. This is the law of the land. This is how treaties work. This is what they mean. You know, lots of people would like to just say, oh, that was history. That doesn't matter anymore. It matters because that's the law. It matters because this is our territory. This is something that really needs to be getting out. This is something that needs to be ingrained in the Canadian fabric, the Canadian dialogue. And it's something that hasn't really happened. It's creeping in. But I think it needs to come in like a hammer because people just don't seem to get it.
I'd like to move on to our next segment. What announcements do you have for us this month?
Well, we do have a very exciting month coming up. Of course, we have our regular drum night at Hilltop on Thursdays. And we have an election coming up on July 18th, where Alderville goes to the polls and they're going to decide who the next chief and council is for the next 3 years, because we have moved to a 3-year term under our custom election code. Our favorite annual event is coming up this weekend, July 12th and 13th. It's our powwow, and we have another expanded powwow grounds, so it's going to be bigger and better than even last year, which was bigger and better than the year before. And of course, we have brought back the regatta. So last year was the first year we did the regatta in almost a decade, and we are now having our regatta on August the 2nd. So we're going to have prizes and trophies for all sorts of boat races, dragon boat races. So come on down to Vimy Point, and you're going to be in for you know, quite some fun and excitement. And for a health and public safety reminder, with all this heat we've been having, we do have a heat wave alert on, and our community center is a designated cooling site. If you find you're at home and you don't have air conditioning or it doesn't work and you feel like your health might be at risk, please come down to the community center where it's air conditioned and you can have water and snacks and good conversation. And that is our month ahead.
Chief Tanner Simpson, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
You're welcome. It's always a pleasure.
I want to thank Alderville First Nations Chief Tanner Simpson for talking to me today. I want to thank you for joining our conversation, and I hope you enjoyed this time to learn more about what's going on, the stories and issues facing Indigenous people living in Northumberland and elsewhere. That's all for this week. I'm Robert Washburn. Join us again next time for Conversations Towards Reconciliation with Tanner Simpson.